Now, in the New England tradition, I'm happy to take comments, questions, and rude remarks if necessary. I am having trouble seeing in the lights because they're right in my face, so I'll do the best I can to pick you out.
Okay, my question was, I understand you're a mental approach to healthcare. How long, realistically, do you think before every citizen in the United States will have healthcare under your administration?
I do not have an incremental approach to healthcare. I have an approach that covers everybody. It's not a single payer, because I don't think we can pass a single payer, and I'm a veteran of the healthcare wars. When I was first the governor, it was the year before Bill Clinton, I tried to get a big healthcare plan passed, and it didn't work, because it was beaten by the same forces that beat Bill Clinton's plan. So what I concluded was, instead of trying to reform the system and have the Democrats fight among each other because they can't agree on how to reform it, and the Republicans and the special interests kill the bill, leaving 41 million people with no health insurance for another 10 years waiting for the next Democratic Party president, we ought to just pass what we can that'll cover everybody. So we do. My plan covers everybody. It enrolls everybody. Some people who don't want to pay don't have to have it, so we assume 10 million people are going to opt out. Everybody's covered who wants to be. It costs something, but at the lower ends of the scale, under $33,000 for adults and families, it doesn't cost anything. If you're under 25, essentially it doesn't cost anything. And if you're making $40,000 a year and you're self-employed, you get to buy the same private plan your congressman does for 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So that's $3,000. Sounds like a lot of money, but it's less than $300 a month. Tell me where you can get health care for less than $300 a month. So it works. It'll cover everybody. Once we get everybody in the system, then we can have a big fight about how to fix the system so it is whatever you want it to look like. But I don't want the victims of that fight to be the 40 million, 41 million people with no health insurance anymore. So the system's not incremental. It's not reform, but it's not incremental. I think it'll take a year to get it passed and 2 years to implement it. Yes.
What are your views on stem cell research?
I think that ought not to be left to politicians. That ought to be left to doctors.
Yes. Yes.
So we ought to do it.
Yes.
All of it.
How about your views on this advertisement of drugs, direct-to-consumer advertising?
I think direct-to-consumer advertising is awful, but there's not much we can do about it. So I'm going to do a little something about it right now. I'm going to give you some free medical advice, which is worth what you just paid for it. If anybody of you take the little purple pill, I don't mean Viagra, I mean Nexium, right? Nexium is essentially a drug that was patented for one reason. It allows the drug companies to charge $140 instead of about $50, because it's the same thing as Prilosec, which is coming off patent. When you take Prilosec and it ends up in your stomach, it turns essentially into Nexium. There's no particular advantage. That's what directed consumer advertising does. It's been litigated. It's been assumed to be commercially protected free speech. What we should do is make the money you spend on advertising non-deductible. And we should also, from tax point of view, and we should also find a way to reduce tax benefits for companies who spend more on advertising than they do on research and development. That would help. Nice to see you, and thank you for that wearing that enormous bean button.
What else? I have a question regarding the fully funding education for kids with disabilities. It's a huge burden on every city and town. I'd like to know how you feel that if that can happen and when.
It can and it will. My first budget will look like this. We will rescind the president's tax cut. We will replace it with some other things that will help middle-class people. We will put in universal health insurance. That cost is less than a third of the president's tax cut if you include the interest cost. And we will fully fund special education in the first year's budget, none of this incremental over 6 years. The reason I want to do it that way is some of the money is going to end up in the schools' pockets, and some of it will end up in the property taxpayers' pockets. You will reduce your property taxes and improve and fully fund special ed, which will give the school boards an enormous amount of leverage. It's $27 billion. That sounds like an enormous amount of money, but the fact is that's out of a $2.1 trillion budget. We can afford to do this, but we have to make a choice. Do you want your property taxes to go down instead of up, or would you rather have the measly $100 that the average American got in tax cuts? Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. That was a question about funding special ed, as you probably gathered, and I'll repeat the question from now on. Yes.
On affordable housing, Manchester is a community that's growing very fast right now, and one of our major problems is affordable housing. We're planning on creating something like 3,000 jobs in the next 2 years, but we're not going to find the homes for these people. When are we going to get the government to do what they used to do in helping HUD and other forms to allow us to have affordable housing?
Well, the president doesn't believe in affordable housing. He's recommending cutting back on Section 8. I wouldn't do that. I think that's a big mistake. Here's the model I like the best for affordable housing. We need local people to come forward to us with projects. And then we'll fund the projects if they're good enough. There's never enough money to do everything you want, which is fine. So because the best project will get the best funding. And if we provide gap financing, you will be obligated to leave that housing in perpetual affordability. We're not going to have tax credits that expire after 20 years. They sound like a great deal when you're 20 years out. I was the governor that was 1 year out. I was facing 1,000 families out in the street, and we had to scramble to figure out how to not close down those projects by allowing them to go to market rate. So that's a big mistake. So we need to fund it. We need to provide the gap financing and buying down the mortgage and interest costs and rent costs. And then you have an obligation to keep it permanently affordable and not allowed to go back up to market rates. If we take that approach, those localities that are really motivated to do affordable housing will do it. And I think that's a reasonable approach to fund it. Yes? Small businesses and investment in small businesses. Here are the two things that I would do. Other than trying to deal with regulatory burden, we need somebody from the SBA that's actually been in a small business sometime in order to make that work, because there's an enormous amount of paperwork. The two things that are the biggest problem for small businesses other than paperwork are, one, health insurance. In my bill, there's $9 billion for small businesses to make health insurance more affordable. So they can buy guaranteed issue for the federal government, same as a self-employed person could under my plan. So that'll help with the health insurance costs. Secondly, the other problem is capital. Small businesses can't get capital. Banks don't like to lend to them. For the same reason that states and the federal government hasn't done much with small business, because it's harder to work with small businesses. People work like crazy. They don't have time to work with the government. They don't have the money to hire consultants that can do it. They're at higher risk, so you put the money at more risk. If we collateralize loans the way that Fannie Mae does, or Sallie Mae with student loans, and sold them on the New York Stock Exchange, you'd have a market for your small business loan. You'd pay a little extra interest cost, but I don't hear small business people complaining about interest. I hear them complaining about availability of capital at all. Those are the two things you need to do: help with health insurance costs and help with capital aggregation. We can do both of them. I can't see over here. I'm working my way clockwise. I'm going to start back here and go again. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question. I know that you were against going to Iraq with the war, but now that we're there, seems like people who are there feel that they're in a worse situation, they have less electricity. So my question is, if you were made president, how would you get us out of there if that's what you want to do, and yet not leave the Iraqi people in the lurch?
Well, it's not just a matter of leaving. The question is, what do we do about Iraq now that we're there? And losing the peace is not an option, because this is something the president just never figures out. The military is great. They go in, they do the job, and then there's no follow-through. Why? Because the president hasn't figured out what to do next. They never think more than 3 or 4 days in advance. Now, here's what General Shinseki told the president: he's going to need 200,000 troops. He got his knuckles slapped by the Secretary of Defense. Guess what? We need about 50,000 more troops. In Afghanistan, we have 9,000 troops. We're making deals with the warlords, not exactly a fount of democratic the bastion of democratic rule, in order to control 4/5 of the country. What is the matter with these people in Washington? Here's what we need to do. We need to internationalize the occupations of both Afghanistan and Iraq. And we're going to need a new president to do this, because he poisoned the well and made practically everybody in America and the world mad at us on the way in, so no wonder we can't get their help. Now, let me just say something about this. This is important. Berlin Wall collapsed, or was ripped down. The Soviet Union fell apart 10 or 15 years ago without a single shot being fired by the United States, for two reasons. One, we had a strong military. And the other is that the vast majority of the people on the other side of the Iron Curtain admired America, and they wanted to be like us. This president doesn't understand defense. He thinks it's all about the military. What defense and strength and world leadership is not just about a strong military, It is also about being respected and having high moral purpose. You cannot be a leader if the only way that you lead is to have people be afraid of you. So the one thing I'm going to promise you, if I'm elected president, we're still going to have a strong military, but we're going to undo what this president has done to us in the last 2.5 years, and we will once again be the most respected nation in the world and not just the most feared.
Whose primary goal is to remove George Bush from office. And I have no issue with your stances against George Bush. My concern lies with the machine behind him driven by Karl Rove. And I'm very concerned by the fact that Karl Rove sees you as an easy target. Can you tell me politically why he has that stance and how you can address that stance?
Can I tell you why Karl Rove sees me as an easy target? Well, everybody knows how smart Karl Rove is. He'll let you know that in a second if you ask him. So, smart and Machiavellian as he is, if you wanted not to run against somebody, what would you say publicly? Now, I mean, this is completely self-serving, I understand that, but politics is kind of a self-serving business. But I actually believe that we may be the only people that can beat the campaign that can beat George Bush. The reason is, here you are, an independent who's coming to what's mostly a Democratic audience. I bet there's some Republicans here. I won't ask you to see. I mean, right. Are there any Greens here? Yeah, any John McCain fans here? Yeah? How about any Ross Perot fans here? See? You know what? That's how you win. You put together a big coalition of people who understand that we cannot have what we have in Washington, doing what we have to this budget, to this job situation. So my argument is, who else except our campaign can bring in the new people? We're not going to beat George Bush by being almost as conservative as he is and hoping to take 500,000 votes away from him. He can get that in Broward County alone if he fixes his fiddles with the computers. But the way you're going to beat George Bush is to give people a reason to vote again. And if that's what we're going to do. Yeah. And if we're getting, I don't know how many people are here, but there are a lot more than I thought were going to be here. I mean, I bet there's a couple hundred. We probably have it. Does anybody have a count?
I'm going to go with 150.
150?
Do you assume that everybody here...
250? 250 people, right?
Woo! Do you assume that everybody here supports you?
Pardon?
Do you assume that everybody here supports
do
you?
Do I think everybody here supports me? No. I think some people do, and I think some people are here for curiosity because they want to find out what I'm all about.
Or maybe we want to be informed voters. So
or maybe you want to be informed voters,
maybe
right.
Maybe you shouldn't speak on our behalf.
I'm not speaking on your behalf. All I'm saying is you were interested enough to come. Have you gone to all the other candidates?
Yes.
Maybe you have. There are a lot of people who don't go to all the other candidates. And I know one thing. No other candidate has drawn a crowd of 700 in New Hampshire this year, and we did it in Portsmouth. So all I'm saying is that if we're going to beat George Bush, we have to give people a reason to get excited about politics. There was a woman we got an email from who's a student at Penn State. She emailed us and said, I sold my bike for democracy. This is a student at Penn State. She sells her bike. She says it's $135. If people are willing to do that, they want desperately to take their country back. And that's what this is about. Yeah. I'm going to take a couple more. Sharon. Yes. Does my universal health care plan cover domestic partnerships? Yes, sort of. Let me tell you why it does. It actually has nothing to do with the plan. As president, I believe that all Americans have to be treated equally. I signed the Civil Unions Bill in Vermont, which says that gay and lesbian people are entitled to the same legal rights, hospital visitation, insurance, inheritance, as everybody else. Vermont's the only place in the country that gay and lesbian people have the same legal rights that everybody else does. So what I've said I would do as president, I do not think that it's the federal government's job to get in the marriage business. I'm against DOMA. I don't think they should have passed DOMA because that's intrusion of the federal government into states making the decisions. States are going to have to deal with this. Some will do civil unions like we did. Some may go do gay marriage, like Massachusetts may do. Others may do some form of domestic partnership, like California is about to do. Whatever the arrangement that states allow, to allow gay and lesbian people to have the same rights as everybody else, the federal government should recognize them. Because the federal government has about 1,500 rights that you can only get if you're married. And so I think those rights ought to be able to be available to all couples, whether they're married or in civil unions or in domestic partnerships, and that would include the right to the health care purchase.
Question for you. Everybody knows that the Hamas and Islamic Jihad need to be taken care of in Israel in order to create peace, but also the extremists on the Israeli side need to be dealt with. Would you ever cut loan guarantees to Israel for not moving settlements that, except for the ones that are directly outside of Jerusalem, that are already so annexed by Israel that they can't be removed?
Question is, what about the extremists on both sides in the Israeli-Palestinian situation? Everybody understands that we have to deal with Hamas and Islamic Jihad. What about the extremists on the Israeli side? Yes, there actually is a provision in the 1992 loan guarantees that for every dollar that's spent in any kind of settlement infrastructure, a dollar of the loan guarantee gets cut, and I support that.
Kind of a related question. Do you oppose, just in general, Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip?
Yeah, I support a two-state. Do I oppose Israeli occupation of the West Bank? Yes. I think the only reasonable solution to peace any time in the Middle East is going to be a two-state solution. Now, the key is trying to think about what's happening here. There are 15% of people on both sides who would gladly push the opposite side either to the Jordan River or to the Mediterranean. And unfortunately, those are the people that are controlling the temperature and the tenor of what's going on in the Middle East right now. And there are a lot of things that have to be done. The president did nothing for 2.5 years, which I thought was unforgivable. But he is engaged now, and I think that's good. And I hope this is more than the Clear Skies Initiative or something like that right before the election. But the biggest problem is we have to find a way to stop the terror. Because we've got to get the Israelis out of the West Bank. But we can't get the Israelis out of the West Bank if a bomb goes off as it does yesterday and kills all kinds of women and children and so forth. So both, when we talk about the two-state solution, we have to understand that you absolutely have to have guaranteed security of the borders. And if you for both states. And if you don't, you're not going to get to it. Now, let's think about the terror. It's the Palestinian bombers. They supply the bodies. Who supplies the money? It's the Iranians, the Saudis, and the Syrians. And the Europeans give the Iranians the money through their oil. Who gives the Saudis the money?
We do.
And they send some of it to Hamas and some of it to fundamentalist schools to teach small children to hate Americans, Christians, and Jews. That has to stop. And until we get an American president who's willing to stand up to those governments that are doing that, we can't get peace in the Middle East. We can be tough with the Israelis. We can be tough with the Palestinians. But you are never going to get the Israelis out of the West Bank as long as there's terror like that. That's just a fact. Without taking sides. I was horrified by the bomb that went off this morning and killed people. And then I thought, there'll be some people who blame the Israelis. This is not a blame game. It doesn't make any sense for us to say it's the Palestinians' fault, it's the Israelis' fault. There's plenty of things going on both sides. We want peace. We can get peace. I was there a year ago. The majority of people on both Israel and in the Palestinian side will gladly settle for a two-state solution if only they could have peace. The Palestinians have been devastated. 80% of the Palestinians live below the poverty line. The Israelis are devastated. Psychologically, people a little younger than I can't send their kids to school without knowing if they're going to come back or not in one piece. There is an enormous longing for peace, but we need a president who's been willing to be tough, especially with the money that the governments elsewhere in the region, for no reason other than their own internal politics, are using to make sure that we never get to peace. We have to get there, and I think we can get there. I feel very passionate about this. The other thing that most Americans don't understand is that the Palestinians are probably the best hope for a real democracy in the Middle East, because Palestinians have a better understanding of democracy than anybody else. A million Israeli Arabs live in a democracy. Many Palestinians have been to the United States, have been to Europe. More Palestinian women participate in government than any other Arab society. Before the Second Intifada, they had close to a universal university education. This is a group of people that can make democracy work. But we've got to have the leadership on both sides stand up to the extreme folks and say, this is what we want. This is what the majority of people want. Even today, polls in Israel show that most people would settle for a two-state solution if they could have the guaranteed security they deserve. That's a long answer, and I apologize. And this is going to be my last one.
Sure.
If it's a good one.
Next November, when you do get more votes than George Bush, what makes you think it won't be stolen from you?
What makes me sure the election won't be stolen? That actually is a fairly serious question, and this is an issue that's brought up at almost every meeting I go to. I wasn't aware about most of this. You all have educated me about this. There apparently are computer systems, which are pretty controversial now, which do not leave a paper trail, so you can't recount the votes once they're in there. That is of grave concern to me. It means you can go up and touch the screen and something else, something could either be wrong deliberately or not inside the computer, which would register, as they did in Broward, a vote for Al Gore as a vote for Pat Buchanan. That's a serious problem. We may have to get inspectors from China to come in and verify our elections. But, you know, I joke about that, but it is a significant problem, and we're going to have to deal with it. There is a bill in Congress, which I'm sure the right wing won't move, which would deal with this by requiring a paper trail on every machine. I don't think it'll probably be a huge problem in New Hampshire, because I think traditionally our states do have a lot of paper ballots and do have machinery that doesn't have hanging chads and all that. But it will, again, be a serious issue in places like Florida, and we're going to have to have our own people doing exit polls to make sure that the votes, as they come out, make sense. Let me close by thanking you all so very, very much for coming, whether you're committed or whether you're not. I really appreciate your taking the time to come. Let me thank Kathy so much for letting us do this at her house. This is just terrific. And let me close by saying this. We have built our organization through the net. I'd like you, if you haven't done so, go home, sign up for our email at deanforamerica.com. I used to say we promise not to spam you except for the last 3 weeks of each quarter when we're trying to raise money, but apparently somebody did spam you using our stuff, which I'm not very happy about. But if you sign up for our email, we'll send you emails about what's going on. If you send them to your friends, your email list, if there's 250 people here, that's 25,000 people if each of you have 100 people on your email list. That is how we're building this movement. This is not just a campaign. This is a movement. Yeah. And it's about taking this country back and we get it. It's about keeping the country that we grew up in. Thank you very much.